Hey, Chad.
Hey, what's going on?
How are you?
Another day in paradise, sir. It's nothing but sunshine and just loveliness here in Portugal.
Yeah, superb. So, firstly, Chad, thank you so much for joining me on the Enjoy at Land podcast. And there's a ton of things for us to kind of go through. But first, just a brief intro for the people out there. And I don't think there's going to be anybody watching that doesn't really know who you are. But Chad Sowash, HR recruitment technology business leader, all things, process, economics around the space, all-round kind of thought leader, really, in the domain. So thank you so much for kind of joining me. There's a few areas that we want to kind of touch on today, Chad. I think this is going to be a little bit more of a kind of ramblings episode as opposed to us.
Sure,
kind of,
why not?
As opposed to us kind of doubling down too much in one particular area. But the first thing, and this is more probably me picking your brain and kind of adding some of my own thoughts here and there, but primarily picking your brain. But I really wanted us to dive straight into offboarding. And the reason for that is that I think it's a little bit of a bugbear of mine generally. I see offboarding is going on, obviously, every single day across every single type of business, everywhere. But I just seem to, I personally feel like it's done badly a heck of a lot of the time. People make it clear they want to leave a business, notice is handed in, they either go on kind of farming leave or whatever type of paid leave, or they stay at the business for a period of time, but they leave that business, and there's some form of process, but they just seem to sometimes fall off a cliff and that kind of person disappears into the ether.
Right. But
what are your kind of overarching thoughts just generally on offboarding and how it seems to be dealt with in the main?
Well, I first and foremost, thanks for having me on. I think it's easy to pick just about any area in HR and TA that does not get enough attention. So there are bugbears everywhere. And to be quite frank, I mean, is there really an area where HR and TA do things exceptionally well? I would say probably not, right? We are a master of none because we are trying to do so much, because HR and TA are constantly chasing a moving target, because most departments find themselves constantly working in the weeds, working tactically and not making the time to work more strategically. So no offboarding, no on offboarding, onboarding, candidate experience, building talent pipelines, and much, much more. None of that gets enough attention, period.
Yeah.
Because, again, we're not making enough time to think strategically, and we're in the weeds too much. So we're always fighting fires.
Man.
So from a process point of view, offboarding, it always seems, in my personal experience anyway, and kind of just, looking, from afar often, it seems to be a process of, you mentioned it from a candidate experience point of view, but, it's so process-driven. This process is, make sure that person is taken down from the system, make sure their user access is taken away, make sure there's an exit interview. I'd hazard a guess that even exit interviews, they're often, in my personal experience, they're met with so much bias of so you want to, almost a bit pissed off, you want to leave our business, and, we've obviously got this kind of thing going on now, which I'm not very happy about. Why do you want to leave our business? But so meeting that head on with that kind of bias, and it's not always done like that, obviously. Even exit interviews, there's so much kind of that tends to be kind of wrong with that part of the process. But what do you think? What would a good offboarding experience, from a high level, what would a good offboarding experience potentially look like?
Yeah, I think once again we think way too short term on the offboarding, because these individuals are alumni and they might want to come back someday, and they might actually have elevated skill sets that we want to have in our organization. So instead of being mad, be happy for the time that they actually spent with us. I mean, throw a going away party or something like that after hours, right? Or something of that nature. We have to think more experientially, right? And we have to think more down the road when we're talking about talent pipelines. It's another thing that TA talks about a lot, but does a really shitty job on, is building a total talent vision, right? And then strategically being able to map that out and then tactically being able to pull that together. You shouldn't be mad on an exit interview. I mean, period. Who knows what that person went through? Even if it was a bad experience with a bad employee, maybe they were going through a rough time of life. They might, and again, we're all human. They might one day be that superstar that we want to have back in our organization. So, you know, we are really, really short-sighted, and that is one of our biggest issues.
Yeah. And then there's a referral marketing angle, isn't there, as well? Like that person going out into the world, talking to people every single day. If they're, you know, if they go out an advocate, you know, and they've just got that kind of general kind of aura of advocacy around them about your company.
Right.
You've got that whole thing, that whole thing. And there's probably, and I don't know if I've seen it before, but there must be, like, from a recruitment marketing employer brand content point of view, there's probably an opportunity there for content, isn't there? You know, if people are willing to give offboarding testimonial reviews, like, I am leaving, but I love this place. And they've been good to me. They've done this. And, but from an, you know, capture some of that experience that we were talking about.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's all the warm and fuzzy stuff, which is cool. But what about NPS scores? I mean, who cares? Who cares about the fluffy stuff, right? The CEO doesn't. He didn't give two shits about that. Marketing doesn't. We'll throw it here. We'll throw it there. I care about the NPS score, right? Yeah. So it's how we're actually treating our customers. It's how we're treating our employees. It's how we're treating, you know, our alums. It is the brand in itself.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably a nice segue into, you know, how we do measure the employer brand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talking about NPS scores, obviously that's a primary metric, isn't it?
Yeah.
From what I can see, a lot of kind of metrics that are circulated around employer brands, you know, be it employee referral rate, cost per hire, social engagement, NPS, obviously being at the top of that list, and all the other things, a lot of it still feels quite woolly in regards to pinning it exclusively to employer brand. Employer brand doesn't seem to own all of those topics in a silo. So in regards to measuring employer brand effectively, and the efforts that are going into, you know, creating a successful employer brand. Have you got any thoughts around that whole piece?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, employer branding is more than just pretty landing pages and great job descriptions.
Yeah.
It represents every touch point of the candidate, employee, and alumni, employee, right? So all those different touch points. It must be a total talent vision that can be executed with process, tech, messaging, and engagement. So until TA and HR professionals understand that, it's always going to be a failure if you're not hitting those touch points. For example, great messaging and new experiential video job descriptions that lead to higher applications rates sound great unless they're going into a black hole. If you're pushing those applicants into a black hole, it's a failure.
Yeah.
It's a total failure. And as you talk about some of those metrics, those aren't major metrics. Those are minor metrics, okay? You know, time to hire, cost per hire, minor metrics. Why? C-suite doesn't give a shit about that.
Yeah.
The end goal is a better net promoter score. Why NPS? Because marketing in the C-suite understand that. They talk about that. They know what that means, right? So we have to start talking the language of business, because the C-suite only care about the bottom line, not the top, not time to hire, not cost per hire. So don't get me wrong. Those are very important metrics, but they are only the starting point to further go down the rabbit hole to demonstrate positive and or negative impact that talent has on the bottom line.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So when we're talking about net promoter score, we're talking about ultimate satisfaction of your customer base. Yeah, we kind of align to that. We're linking the overall satisfaction of our customers, the people that pay all of our wages in our business, to their overall satisfaction. The higher that is, the better job, clearly, the employer brand team is doing. Is that fair to say?
Well, and again, this is a team effort. You can't just say the employer brand team, right? The employee, the TA as a whole, there has to be this orchestra that happens. And unfortunately, we've got a lone trombone way over there. We've got a violin. It's all in disarray. That's the biggest issue. We need to have strategy aligned with the executable tactics that go in place.
Yeah, agreed. So you've got this orchestra, employer brand, one small part, obviously, but they have to be still held account to something and to success and failure.
Oh, yeah.
NPS is huge. It's so big. The whole orchestra contributes to that success.
Right.
Now, and this happens in traditional marketing, recruitment marketing, employer branding. You know, it's really often quite difficult to figure out if they're doing a good job or not. More revenue is being created, more customers are happy.
Mm-hmm.
They could still be doing a rubbish job. And that and that's kind of true, isn't it? And I just feel it's one part of the orchestra that some, or not one, you know, there's several where they could be doing a phenomenal, they very often are doing a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm.
But the NPS scores are low. You know, and that whole scenario I mentioned a minute ago, that's in reverse. Mm-hmm. But they're actually doing the right thing. But it's not joined up. So have you got any thoughts on, you know, and again, I know you don't like going into the weeds too much in that, because it is, going into the weeds doesn't give the whole picture. But if you do silo employer branding and look at how can we tell if they're doing a good job or not, Have you got any thoughts just around kind of that as a spoiler topic?
Yeah, I mean, so this is all about being able to hit all of the points within the project plan, right? And to be able to carry those out back to my one of my original examples. If I have amazing experience for candidates, outreach, drip campaigns, those types of things, I pull them into a great application experience, right? We actually have a nice, quick, easy application experience, and then they go into a black hole.
Yeah.
Right? That's the thing is, we have to be more transparent, and we have to stiffen our spine, for God's sakes. If we're an employer, employment branding leader, we have to be able to go down through and say, hey, this is my chunk. This is what we're doing. This area, here are the stats behind it. This is where we're falling down on the tech side. Right. Yeah. And we need to actually now, what can happen? And this is a beautiful example. Mm-hmm. What can happen is if we need point solution tech to be able to start drip campaigns or response or what have you, and or maybe matching for some of those individuals who just weren't quite right for the role, or maybe they were silver medalists, we need to be able to match them quickly and hopefully get them to reapply for another job because they're still great talent. Right. That is the type of engagement we need to seek, right? We need to put those plans in place to understand that.
Yeah.
That's what an orchestration is, right? You've got the employer brand they've got the violin section. They are playing it beautifully, but they've got to be able to stand up and say, hey, you know, over there on the oboe, you better get your shit together, right? Yeah. Because this is all falling apart. We're doing our thing. We sound amazing. Yeah. You need to be on key.
Yeah. And that communication, I think, like you really nicely kind of illustrated that communication thing is so key, isn't it? Making sure that relationship actually exists, as opposed to, which happens in so many even enterprise businesses, employer brand is kind of stuck here. And it's like, we need some pretty landing pages, we need some pretty pictures, next up our job ads. Again, like you say, that stuff doesn't even scratch the surface without the operational kind of might that you've been highlighting. That's a great point. It's also kind of fair to say, I think, on the employer branding side, that especially if we kind of look at an enterprise business, the agendas that probably exist, like if you look at a typical enterprise tech business, operations in, I don't know, let's just use a round number, you know, 25 companies globally, different teams, they've got operations, they've got finance, they've got technology, all these people live and work in different places all over the world. From an employer branding point of view, you've got often a centralized hub, sometimes looking after like 20 different completely different agendas, but the agenda in North America tech could be that they've got this gaping hole of, like, you know, they've got zero females in their team, for example. It's a massive problem that needs addressing, okay? In sales, China, or whatever, you know, just trying to use a polar, you know, a polarizing kind of example, they might have a completely different problem. But the employer brand strategy that needs to kind of be deployed in those two areas, they're very different, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
But is it kind of, maybe it's not fair to say, but in my mind, is it fair to say that so often, even in enterprise, the employer brand things are often so small that they are looking after 20 agendas, many more of them, but they have to, they're often forced to deploy basically the same strategy everywhere just so they can keep the plate spinning. And is that a problem?
No, it's definitely a problem. But again, this is where we need to take control instead of, you know, say, oh, woe is me, and find yourself in the fetal position, sucking your thumb in the corner. Yeah. I mean, we really need to understand the power that we have. And if these businesses are having problems, well, those businesses are having problems. That doesn't necessarily make it my priority.
Yeah.
Right? What are the priorities of work, first and foremost? Now, when you're First off, let's talk about, like, your DIB strategy, right? So your DEIB strategy could be that you need to do a little bit of a refresh to be able to make it more, you know, LGBTQ, you know, friendly on the website or something of that nature. But that doesn't help you with the sourcing. So again, you have to be connected with sourcing so that they are going after a more diverse pools.
Yeah.
You can only do so much. Now, back to having not enough, not enough people or not enough resources. One of the things that I love about some of our leaders in this space, Jeff Lackey, who used to be the VP of talent for CVS, he actually went to different departments and said, "Hey, look, we can give you priority, but we need budget for that."
Yeah.
He received budget from all the different departments who wanted priority to actually happen. So what happened there? He was able to structure it so that if that employer brand team needed more people, he now had budget and resources to be able to go do that.
Yeah.
Right? He was thinking like a business person.
Yeah.
What we do is we sit back, we look at the resources we have, and we try to work it with that when it's probably not possible in many cases.
Yeah.
Right? So make it possible.
Well, it's such a good point. I think some of your previous points kind of they edge towards the same area, that I think thinking about the economics of the situation.
Oh yeah, yes.
Helps you to that, don't you, all the time? Yes. There's so much in your word, and you know, I've used the same economy and phrase, but there is so much fluffy stuff going on, isn't there? But ultimately, everything has to contribute economically. It needs to work in the engine. And it needs to make sense, doesn't it?
Exactly. Exactly.
So on the same kind of note, that maybe, you know, just meandering to a slightly different area, you know, if we were looking at the ideal structure of a, you know, how does kind of, you know, HR work with TA, work with recruitment marketing, work with employer branding? In so many companies, many enterprises, different types and sizes of companies.
Yeah.
They're completely separate. You know, you've even come up against like employer branding or recruitment marketing and traditional marketing. And it's like wall up in the middle. There's almost no communication at all. There's a big project going on here. They get kiboshed by corporate marketing. There seems to be walls in lots of places. If you had to design like an ideal function, obviously from a high level, we haven't got, you know, we haven't got weeks and weeks to go into the weeds, but from a high level, if you had to design an ideal function to include those kind of capabilities, what would it kind of look like, and how would the relationship kind of work?
Well, I mean, that's a podcast series all of its own, let alone just a question on a single episode.
Yeah.
But here's a great example to work within the actual construct that we have today, right? The last thing we're going to be able to do is blow away a construct and build new hierarchy, right? Yeah. Just not going to happen. Sarah's a great example. Amy Butchko, who is in charge of, she's VP of talent technology at SAIC, which is a company that has, I think, 180, 200,000 people. So not a small organization. She worked directly with the CRO who needed salespeople, right? We need salespeople. We can't sell without salespeople. So she worked with them to understand that they had old tech, applicant tracking system. They needed point solutions. They needed all these things to be able to get them what they wanted faster. She got budget for that, right? The reason why she got that budget is because she spoke the language of sales. She understood what sales needed, right? You have to do that with every single department. This isn't just about filling seats, right? This is about what is necessary for the business, bottom line, right? CMO cares about, you know, net promoter score and, you know, what else, what other projects do they need to actually fulfill? Well, they need talent for that, right? Yeah. So we need to have better relationships, almost stewards of the organization. When we talk about traditional marketing, you know, there is friction there. And let's face it, big marketing has much more power than HR and TA does. So that's only because they can demonstrate bottom line impact. Yeah. They can draw a direct line to that, right? Once TA and HR organizations can start showing that positive or negative impact on the NPS score, marketing will pay attention because that affects them. Until then, we're going to continue to be treated as a cost center, and we're not.
Yeah.
And here's what everyone needs to understand. Listen to this podcast. No product or service is ideated or developed without talent. Yeah. Nothing is sold. Nothing is serviced. Wallet share is not increased, and a company does not exist without the talent that we put in the seats. Yeah. HR and TA are the beating heart and the engine of every organization. We are not a damned cost center.
Yeah.
Once we start to understand that, we stiffen our spines, we can start to be treated like equals. They need to go further. We need to align narratives. And we also need to take the damn seat at the table instead of waiting around for somebody to offer it to us.
Yeah. It's such a good point. I do see a lack of communication in the market generally, just about the impact. So when we're looking at even, you know, recruitment, marketing, employer branding, impact on bottom line, impact on business improvement, impact on driving this rocket ship forward.
Yeah.
You know, I do see a lack of that, and I would love to see more of it. You know, where you just kind of got these direct comparisons of, like, this time last year, we were here, the business was here, we're here, the business is here. And do you notice that? Would you like to see more of that? Just like, you know, talk to me about that, but talk to me about that in parallel and that, the impact you're having.
Well, so internally, we have to have the, let's break it down. We need to have the minor metrics conversations, and then leaders need to make those into major metrics conversations, right? So if we're talking about the CRO, this is an easy one, right? So you take a look at the CRO, and you can even take a look at last month's numbers, right? And you can break it down sales per salesperson. Well, that means that individual who is that seat that's open right now, what's the cost of that seat? You can break that down very easily. You know what the numbers are, right? You can even extrapolate from back from last year and up at 6%, which is, you know, maybe what normal growth is. These are things that we can easily do, and we can work with the CRO to understand. Now, how long? Now, this is when time to hire comes into place, right? The time to hire, if that's 30 days, we know how much revenue is lost because that sales seat's not filled. Then we can start to push that out. How long does it take to onboard? How long does it take to train? How long does it actually take for that individual to start generating revenue in a seat? That is what we do, right? It doesn't exist without us. So we start to do those very, very simple equations and have those very important business discussions with other business leaders in the organization. That is when we earn the right and take that damn seat at the table. I mean, we should be drawing those direct comparisons.
Absolutely, makes a lot of sense. So, just last point on that topic.
Sure.
Can or should, you know, traditional corporate marketing recruitment, marketing, employer branding, we'll kind of put them into one silo for now. I know they're not, but it is for now. But should they exist in the same area? Should they be kind of split out? And where does the hierarchy kind of sit, you know, just as an overarching thing?
Yeah, I think that's gonna differ from, you know, organization to organization. If you're a consumer product organization, you have a big brand, I think if marketing sees, you know, this directly impacts our NPS score, they're going to go, holy shit, you know, we really need to do something with this. We need to take control and we need to apply more budget and resources. Other organizations, maybe not so much. I was in a room with hundreds of CMOs and brand leaders from major Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah.
And we were talking to Ellen Bailey, who at the time was at Intel.
Yeah.
And she led really a lot of their systems and operations. And I asked her how many people apply into Intel, you know, every year. And it was well over 1 million.
Wow.
And everybody was like, and all the brand leaders were like, oh my God. And so we asked the brand leaders, how many of you even thought that many people would be touching your brand and then going through an application process? When's the last time any of you went through an application process? Was it easy? Was it hard? What was the messaging you got back? What was the engagement? How did that actually work? Right. Yeah. So depending on, I think, you know, the status and or control of any CMO or organization, you know, that'll definitely ebb and flow.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because it does make sense, doesn't it? Like, all businesses are different.
And yeah.
Industry sectors are different, needs are different, strategies are different, and there isn't necessarily one sheet fits all the boats, is there, for this kind of
nope.
thing? Conundrum.
Yeah.
Affecting, and it's the job of the CMO to figure out, well, the last company I was in, it worked like this, but that ain't going to work over here because of these reasons.
Yeah.
It's yeah. an interesting point. So we're coming to the kind of tail end of the episode, and it's kind of flown by in a heartbeat. Thanks to you. And
thank you.
Just wondered if you could maybe, you know, employer brand as a podcast, you know, what we aim to do is kind of help employer brand leaders and anyone in the community of employer branding, recruitment, marketing, to not be employer bland. You know, are there any kind of parting words of wisdom from you? You know, just from maybe a company that is setting out, you know, an SME setting out on their journey of like, we've got a corporate, you know, recruitment, we've got a corporate marketing function that we're just starting to do some stuff in employer branding, haven't done a lot, we're kind of scratching our heads a little bit. Are there any kind of parting words of wisdom from you about how you would kind of potentially, you know, think about moving forward on that journey?
Yeah, I would say ask the hard questions. You know, what positions are vital? What positions aren't vital? You know, what are priority? What's not priority? Everything to everybody's priority until you start putting budget to it.
Yeah.
Right. And when you start having those discussions, like you said, let's say, for instance, China, and you know, the U.S. in some cases, they're doing the same thing. They need the same thing, but the U.S. is giving more budget than what the China arm is. Well, there's more priority there. Yeah. If you have more priority, then if we had more budget, then we could provide more priority because we could put more hands on, more eyes, more talent on the need, right?
Yeah.
So to be able to build a team, especially from the ground up, mm-hmm. it's the expectation from day one that this is about priority and what's vital to the bottom line.
Yeah.
And always challenge if this position, if these types of positions are actually impacting the bottom line. If they're not impacting the bottom line, they're not vital. If they're not vital to the organization, then why are we even opening them?
Yeah.
Right? We just saw a massive glut of individuals who were laid off, right? Over the last, you know, 6 to 9 months, for goodness sakes. Why? Because they weren't vital positions. There was just nothing but gorging of employment and companies of talent, right? Yeah. It wasn't necessary. It's our duty to be stewards of the bottom line and mm-hmm. to help the organization understand what makes sense
yeah.
when it comes to talent. Because again, this is about NPS score. If you have a bunch of people who are being flushed down the toilet because we just did a big glut of hiring, what do you think's gonna what did that just do to our brand?
Yeah.
Right? Not just for the people we just let go, but for all the press releases and everything else that we saw. We need to be better stewards of our brand, and we need to stiffen our spine.
Yeah, such a good point, and a great kind of parting phrase as well. I've written that one down, but stewards of the bottom line. I think, have you used that before? Because that's...
I have not, but I will.
Yeah, that was easy to digest, but such a big impact in it. And I think that's what I'm going to take away from a lot of this conversation, actually, because I think it's so easy to get caught up in the fluffy stuff and then try and attribute the fluffy stuff to smaller metrics. That this thing is so much bigger than that. It's so much bigger than that. And we need to look at it from a much bigger height. And if it's not touching the bottom line, stop being so goddamn fluffy and getting your colouring pencils out with this stuff. You know, this is a business operation. It's a money-making machine.
Yeah.
If it's not touching that, it's not making our customers happier, then we've got problems, and they're the problems we need to fix. And probably really it's simple stuff, but
it's an orchestra, my friend. It's an orchestra. If you got too many oboes, it's going to throw the entire sound off, right? It's got to be balanced, but it's an orchestra, and it's not easy. But we've got to do better in being able to pretty much have the conversations and educate ourselves on what the needs are of the business. Don't have them tell you what they are. Go find out what they are and challenge them and be a good steward of the bottom line.
Yeah, love that. We're going to finish on that because I love it. Chad, thank you so much. I know you're out at your place in sunny Portugal. You're taking time out for this, and you know, it's really appreciated. Thank you so much. And
thanks for having me.
Take care. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks for having me. Take care, Chris.
Cheers. Bye.